Our life is intimacy. It's not something extra, but it's the very nature of this that we are. And yet, we often find ways to resist, to hinder this intimacy that we are, that is the nature of our functioning. And one of the ways that we hinder ourselves is holding to what we know about so-called others, so-called ourself. So sometimes we say that practice is being not knowing. Being not knowing. There's a nice koan where one master says, not knowing is most intimate. And it's true. It's so. But it's useful to explore how we can nurture not knowing, how we can allow not knowing, so that we can be supported in being this not knowing, which is exactly what intimacy is. Or, to look at it the other side, to see where we get caught up in knowing, and then what to do. First to see it, because often we don't see knowing, we just assume the truth of knowing, assume that it is, quote, the way we think it is or should be. Whether it is some other person, we know how they should be, or we know how I should be, physically, mentally, emotionally, so forth. This is true in relations one-on-one, in intimate relations, in larger public factors. We know what various governmental officials, corporate officials, sometimes we know what the weather should be. And of course we can see with others how this creates difficulties when people know how other people should be. And what happens when there's conflicting, so to speak, knowings, and we get caught up and hold on to that. Okay, as I like to do with this is, after I say a few words, I'm going to stop and see how we can talk about this together in terms of your practice, our practice. So I'll stop now and see what you have to say, what you want to bring up, what you want to comment or clarify, and I'll respond, or maybe others will respond to what you have to say.
Yeah, I woke up in a, what I would call a crabby mood this morning. I went to bed late last night because we, for various reasons, we had a babysitter. Grandson last night. I got to bed later than I usually have, but I like to, because I'm like And I still got up early, like, you know, I woke up early at least, and then I remembered that I had all these responsibilities. So no way to go back to sleep for a while. But so I was grabby. I noticed, you know, the very, very typical for me in a situation like that is to be very judgmental about that. And you know, to say, you know, why do I have to be crabby? And you know, what's with this Zen stuff? I'm not supposed to be crabby in the morning, and et cetera, et cetera. And it's fortunately this morning, it was a kind gesture by my wife, you know, that kind of stopped that, racetrack going round and round thing in my head. And sometimes it's like that, you know. I want to figure it out in my head. I want to resolve it myself and understand something, realize something, and change something, and all that. And when I do that, I'm not always open to something outside that is always reaching out, you know, to teach me something or to show something. And it's helpful to be open to that, that kind of opportunity that seems to be there a lot if you're open to whatever that's worth.
And being not knowing is being open. Knowing gets in the way, so to speak. And it certainly can be difficult to be intimate as being crabby. If we know that we're not supposed to be crabby, we're not supposed to feel it this way.
Does intimacy then have to do with listening?
One functioning of intimacy is, yes. Listening not just with so-called ears, but listening with whole being. Listening with eyes, listening whole body, or seeing whole body. Yeah. Certainly, if we know what's supposed to be, it's hard to listen. Or if we listen but are constantly adding the judging or evaluating, then we're sort of funneling the listening through a very narrow set of judgments and filters. We miss a lot then.
So, carrying on from that, then not thinking would be open. I mean, not because if you are judging, then you're, you know, then you can start thinking about the judging and thinking about the way they ought to be, or be.
Well, yeah, but
so is open not thinking or not? What is it?
Yes and no. Because we have to be careful if we create this new idea called not thinking. Thinking is another functioning of being human. But if we hold on to our thinking and believe it as the basis of what is supposed to be, then we're getting trapped by our thinking, as opposed to the thinking being another functioning of being human. The ability to judge and evaluate is just another ability, but if we use it where it's of no use, then you can't see what's there. Then you can't be what's here. It's important to be able to know if your leg is strong enough to put weight on or not. But if you add on a judgment, oh, it's so terrible that my muscle is a little weaker today, or oh, isn't it great? I've got these strong muscles now. Then so in a way it's what is not knowing is an invitation to be present. An invitation for the present moment to be our life, if I say it in such a way. And we humans have the choice sometimes to notice when we're caught up in knowing and when it's hindering. But of course, you need to be able to know whether there's too much traffic for me to merge onto the highway now or not. You have to know all sorts of things, otherwise I don't want you on the road. And in all the things that we do.
Not knowing reminded me of this past Thursday night's class where we were to go on about the visit of the condolence call, and where you know he says, alive or dead, and he said, won't say. That sort of not knowing, but what I notice is that I feel frightened if I don't know something. Don't know, you know, and to be able to, I think there's sometimes an expectation of knowing things, not like what you're talking about, where it's just a simple functioning, but you know, knowing how to, in my work, you know, sometimes there's, we think about being strategic, or how can we make sure things go our way, things like this. And in life too, I mean, not just in work, but you know. And so just noticing all the different people pressures to be knowing, and how to be not knowing in those situations.
And knowing that I shouldn't be afraid, or knowing that if I'm afraid, that's a problem. That's another kind of knowing that's important to notice. To be willing to be afraid, or for fear to appear, and continue to function. Certainly, in that case that you were bringing up, we want to know, is it alive or is it dead? What does dead mean? We want to know rather than, can we be present with the not knowing, what we don't know? Or how quickly do we jump to knowing in order to avoid not knowing? And to avoid, as you say, fear.
I was in a conversation recently with a younger generation, and we were talking about meditation, and the young man said that sometimes he meditates on what the universe needs from him. And I thought, to me, that was so revelatory in a way, and that it seems like it represents a desire to be intimate with the entire universe. But is that too much desire or to have formulated the question, is that too much thinking? Where do you put that?
Where is the entire universe?
Here and everywhere.
Right here. Don't have to go anywhere else. Otherwise, we have an idea in our head, oh, the entire universe means out there. See, right here is the entire universe, and it includes so-called out there. It includes the timbers and the roof creaking in the wind, the wind blowing. It's all included in being right here. Otherwise, we couldn't hear and feel.
This week I had a situation where a meeting ended early, so I wanted to get on an earlier plane. So I was not good with not knowing, because I wanted to get to that plane. I would not accept not knowing whether I could make it or not. And it was so uncomfortable, the not knowing. I made the decision to try, but I had to get from, you know, Arlington to Dallas. And then, and so in my head, I had every, because at Dallas you then have to take a train to your terminal, and it's spring break, and there were rows and rows of kids on spring break going places, and then I had to walk for a long way, and the whole time was not knowing. I mean, I basically got to the gate and boarded not knowing, and I was so, I could not be with it. I wanted so much to be home. And then I got on the plane, and the president was flying to Chicago, so we all sat there for an hour.
You mean because the other planes were grounded until he...
No, so I was really, when you were bringing that up, I was not okay. For 2 hours, I was not okay with not knowing. I was like, you know, I was not there.
Well, that...
accepting it.
That's exactly what Faye was talking about.
Yeah, and it's painful.
Yeah, it's painful. It's stressful.
Mm-hmm.
It's suffering.
Yes.
That's what we get.
Yeah.
See? And you get to see it. And then you get to see, when you notice that that's what's happening, you get to see what skillful practice right now.
It was not skillful that day.
Huh?
But I see it now. It's funny, I just remembered that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting that despite the fact that there's stress and suffering, sometimes we can't even see that stress and suffering are reminders of that there's a practice opportunity right here. If there's stress and suffering, that's a reminder to all of us that right here is a practice opportunity. It might not be clear what it is, but that's ours to see. And of course, the simplest is always being present, being breathing, being right where we are, or being not breathing. That's why I say intimacy. It's being right where we are. And isn't it great? You're sitting in the plane and you can't do a thing about it. The plane isn't going to move, no matter how much you complain. Even if the pilot complained, it's not going to move.
I had a connecting flight, so you know, it was like, okay, you have to let this go. You're not going anywhere.
But we can refuse to be where we are. And then we get, what should I say, the results.
If we grieve or we judge or enjoy or whatever, are those our present moments? Is that the end moment?
Isn't grieving grieving? And we can also, what should I say, hold on to and get tangled in grieving, so that it's not just, but that we're sort of building on it and getting our life, ourself, twisted in it and creating suffering out of it, because we're unwilling to be grieving, because we know we shouldn't be grieving. We have some idea we hold on to that's not okay. And so much of this happens as reactive habits of body-mind. So it's to see when we see, and then to make this skillful practice effort. If I say to be the big container that's intimately accepts, is the grieving, but is not hindered by the grieving. Then we just grieve. And someone here wanted to say something? No?
Well, it could be a pretty sad state of affairs, because I'm reminded constantly that I don't know anything.
Well, there's nothing sad about it. That's wonderful.
It could be. If I had a problem, a big problem with that, I'd have a big problem. Because over and over, whenever I think I know something, the universe says, oh, really? Watch this.
Certainly, if people were willing to not know, or at least for a little bit, to be not knowing, there'd be, what should I say, less conflict.
The way you say it, though, it sounds like it's a certain state of mind.
Well, there's a practice effort sometimes that we could make to use not knowing as a support, as being present. In a way, we could say not knowing is this intimacy that is our life. And the attitude of knowing is a habit that we hold on to. We can say that. And it's a habit that can create difficulties. And you don't have to believe me. Look, if you find that that's true in your life, good. And then there's a place to practice with that, to see what's skillful. If you find it's not true, great.
It just seemed like when you say being not knowing and then not knowing, there seems to be a difference there.
Don't get trapped in the words.
But it seemed like not knowing is an intellectual thing.
Just be present. Of course, it's extra to say that. Just like saying being not knowing is extra. We could say not knowing and it be something, some other, as you say, intellectual, conceptual thing. Then we see how we could get trapped by even that. Oh, I've got to be not knowing. He's not being not knowing. She's not being not knowing. Why do I have to do it? Or all sorts of other things. I really did not knowing well. I'm good at not knowing. I know that. And then it becomes another daydream. See, even if we know what it's supposed to sound like here and what the wind is supposed to be, it doesn't follow what we know.
That middle road. Sort of urges to have it.
So we tack one way and then we tack back and then we overshoot and tack back and then overshoot and tack back. It's okay. That's the way we go forward. Straight line is tacking. I don't know if anyone here is a sailor, but certainly sailors do that on sailboats. Even not on sailboats, they often have to tack because of currents, etc.
That no room that Dilinda just mentioned, there's this old story, and Zen's helped me a lot to understand it more. It was a long time ago, I was told this story about an old Brahmin.
Mm-hmm.
He brought the question of whether it is to be, to know and not be happy, or be happy and to not know. And I thought about it a lot, and just left it as an open-ended question, not really answering what's better. And I thought, with Zen, there is a road where you can know and not know and still be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Or still be be no self.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that just reminded me.
And not knowing doesn't exclude knowing. Don't create these two categories, one called knowing and one called not knowing. Not knowing is this big intimacy that allows knowing to appear and disappear. Okay. Thank you.